Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So we're still awaiting official results that we're not going to get until at least tomorrow at the earliest in the Cook County State's Attorney's race. But I do have to say, from what I hear, and I know you've probably seen various reporting on this based on when the report was filed in terms of how many precincts are out and how many mail-in votes are to be counted, because remember, postmarked by Election Day, they're counted. But it seems to me, and this is based on what I hear from people who are better numbers crunchers than I am, that it's more likely than not that Judge Eileen Burke is going to hold on to that lead and win the race. Now, this and that also, it seems more likely than not that BLM Brandon's Bring Home Chicago real estate market killer is going to go down. This was treated as glimmers of hope in election, glimmers of hope in Chicago, I should say, by the Wall Street Journal editorial board yesterday. They took notice of the rejection of the property tax hike pushed by BLM Brandon as maybe Chicago's fate is not sealed. Maybe Chicago isn't fated to a downward progressive spiral after all.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
On Tuesday, voters shocked everyone by soundly rejecting a ballot referendum to raise the city's real estate transfer tax, despite active support by BLM Brandon, although they just call him Mayor Brandon Johnson, and the Chicago Teachers Union. Okay.
Well, as Mayor Johnson said yesterday, Dan, this isn't over yet because they have to still count 66,000 mail-in ballots that came from Chicago and then another 40,000 from the suburbs.
Yeah, it's over because they're not getting the numbers they need from the wards where they need them. For example, like Eileen Burke, just to use the Cook County State Attorney's race as a proxy here, won Beverly 90-10. She won Jefferson Park. She won Lincoln Park 70-30. She won Bucktown 70-30. So she's outpacing Kim Fox in those areas. Which you would think would be base vote for sort of an establishment Irish political hack like Eileen Burke, or a challenger to the new machine, if you want to put it that way. But where Clayton Harris needs similar sizable supermajorities, like in Hyde Park, it's more like 75-25, not 90-10.
Well, he says it's not over yet because we got to buckle up, Dan.
So guess what? Buckle up.
Yeah. And yesterday, you know, this is not a defeat for him because all he was concentrating on yesterday was who's a better community organizer, him or Barack Obama. Literally, these words came out of this dude's mouth.
I'm not the only executive to serve as an organizer. Now, there is an ongoing debate on whether or not President Obama and myself, who was the better organizer, but we'll leave that for another conversation.
Okay, before we completely lose the narrative. So it looks like Burke is going to win. It looks like the referendum is going to go down. In fact, the referendum is going to go down. So whatever. And he's saying even if it goes down, he'll push on with us and so on and so forth.
Yeah, because we still have the house of the homeless.
That's not interesting. That's expected. The question is, what's your read on that? Do you take hope in that? Do you see that Chicago isn't fated to its progressive downward spiral, as the Wall Street Journal hyperventilates about this result, in my view? But what's yours? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Something interesting, too, about the Bring Home Chicago referendum, which may have in part spelled its defeat and in part explains why that BLM Brandon and his teachers' unions, public sector unions, buddies, really, aren't pulling the numbers that you might have expected them to pull. And that's because, and this has to be borne out in the numbers and sort of some post-election analysis, but you hear chirping about this. And so I wonder, as possible partial explanation, that a lot of black business owners and black residents, to be more specific, they saw this real estate transfer tax hike on the rich honkies as it was sold to benefit the poor downtrodden minorities. This is how they sell things, right? The class envy politics. Just the classist politics, the idea that there is classes. But a lot of those supposed constituents of this progressive mafia in Chicago saw this as a migrant tax. This isn't for us. This is for them.
Exactly. There was even a sign up at my polling place that said, if you vote for this, you are going to be spending your tax dollars to house migrants or illegals, not Chicagoans.
Yeah, but that's Lakeview. And that's fine that it redounds beyond those minority communities. Yeah. Well, it's still Lakeview. The point is, why aren't you pulling numbers in the West and South Side wards that you win 95-5 or 90-10 when it's your guy or your issue for your constituency? Why are you seeing attrition there?
I think people are sick of Stacey Davis Gates. The CTU spent $400,000 on the Bring Chicago Home initiative.
That's nothing. 400 grand is nothing. In a citywide race? A citywide issue?
Tens of thousands more dollars. Well, I work with teachers who are like, why are our union dues going to that?
Oh, please.
It's like your union dues also put Brandon Johnson in office. So,
Your union dues. How long have they been a teacher? 5 seconds? Their union dues go to finance the Democrat Socialist Party and Democrat Socialist initiatives. Mm-hmm. What teacher doesn't know that? The phony hand-wringing in this city, I have zero tolerance for.
Well, I think the Wall Street Journal is onto something, because I think the people, the progressiveness, they've had enough. And it's not for them. It's for illegals that are coming into this country or into our city on a daily basis.
Yeah. So that's that may be the delta that spells the defeat of Clayton Harris narrowly and the defeat of this referendum narrowly. But you think that represents a reversal of the death spiral? That's the question. I'll tell you what would represent, not necessarily a reversal, but here's a litmus test for all those who are suggesting that Eileen Burke's election, this political hack.
I don't think she's going to win.
I'm telling you that she is.
Okay. Well, Tony Preckwinkle came in there on election night and said, you are not conceding. I have a friend that was in the room. You are Clayton. You are not conceding. We have all these mail-in votes that still have yet to be counted that are coming from the Southland. And that's where he's from. He lives down there. And she's like, I just think that he's going to win. I think they're going to rig it somehow, some way, that he will come on top.
Okay, fine. I'm just telling you that the people that are actually doing the numbers crunching and who understand the demographics of the city and are looking at the distribution of votes neighborhood by neighborhood and precinct by precinct are suggesting the trajectory is Clayton Harris isn't getting these majorities that he needs where he needs them, and Burke is. And this is the nature of the spread. And when you're talking about making up 10,000 votes out of 60 to 100,000 ballots to be cast, it would be very, very curious if it occurred that I don't get the majorities that I need from the places I need them. I don't get the numbers I need from the places I need them. But all of a sudden, there's this tidal wave that puts me over from places where I was underperforming in a low turnout election. Possible? It's possible. It's much more possible with Harris than it is with the referendum.
Right.
But I still think it's unlikely. But that's sort of a secondary point, because if Harris won and the referendum passed, then we wouldn't be having this conversation. The only reason there's even this conversation about glimmers of hope is the prospect that the referendum has lost and that Burke gets nominated and then ultimately probably goes on to win the general election. And that should represent glimmers of hope for Chicago. That's the question. Does it? George in Naperville.
Yeah, Dan, hope and change, beautiful words that Barack Obama taught us mean nothing. But, Dan, don't stop thinking about tomorrow.
Okay, Fleetwood Mac. John in Libertyville.
Yeah, I mean, I'll believe it when I see it with Burke winning, but I'll take your word at it. I do think it's a step in the right direction. I don't think it's the end of progressivism, but a lot of people who vote Democrat seem to be waking up to things such as illegal immigration, the way crime is handled. And if you think about how few people were in jail or how few people are now in jail compared to before, it's around 5,000 people,
yep,
daily population in Cook County. And before it was over 10,000. I think her being around will make a significant difference, even if it's just 2,000 more people in jail every day.
Well, here's the thing that I hear what you're saying, John, but here's the thing. I mean, this is some sort of shot across the bow of progressivism. What's Eileen Burke? Is she some sort of centrist? But based on what? She's an identitarian hack. She's playing the same game that Brandon Johnson is. And as we discussed more so than probably people are interested in based on turnout, the big distinction between the two, other than their race and their heritage, so the tribal politics of it all, which they both played, was a felony at $300 retail theft versus felony at $1,000.
And the Chicago business community got behind her, and they're all at her election event, you know, saying that'll be a start. Grant DePorter was there. Everyone was there saying, you know, we need something.
Oh, Grant DePorter was there. And so how is this a shot across the bow of progressivism if you just dress it up in a more palatable uniform? I mean, what are people talking about? Here's something to think about if Eileen Burke does go on to win. Here's something that would be a first step. And this is the baby step. $300, $1,000. I don't care where Grant DePorter and these mindless.
Their businesses are there.
I don't care where Grant DePorter is politically. That signifies nothing. He's a bootlicker. He's a bootlicking rent seeker, just like most of these corporate hacks in Chicago who are part of the disintegration of the city. And I'm a little tired that people can't retain a thought in their head for 5 seconds that this wasn't done without the support of the business community. I'm talking about the disintegration of the city over the last 40 years. Every step of the way, these people, oh, they were there. Oh, look who's, they were there too. They were there every step of the frickin' way. For God's sakes, snap out of it. What the hell's wrong with people? So here's something to consider for an actual first step. Eileen Burke gets elected. Let me see her take on sanctuary city county status. Let me see her take on the Pritzker Purge Law when appeals to release people arrested for serious crimes pending trial, who are being held pending trial, are up 26,000%. And the Illinois Supreme Court is about to intervene. Let's see that happen. And then we can talk about baby steps challenging the new Marxist hierarchy in Chicago and Illinois.
All right, let's take a bet. I'm going to bet you that Clayton Harris is going to win. How much you
want to
bet?
I'll bet you 10 grand.
have 10 grand.
What do you want to
100
bet?
$100.
Fine.
Okay.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So Hunter Biden's former business partners, two of them, Tony Bobulinski and Jason Galanis, testified yesterday before a House impeachment inquiry, before the House Republican impeachment inquiry committee. And, you know, Bobulinski didn't provide us anything we didn't already know, really. That we didn't already learn, that he didn't already back in 2020, in advance of the 2020 election, when he sat down for the extended multi-part interview with Tucker Carlson.
Right, and it took 4 years to get here, which is amazing to me.
Yeah, exactly. And I know that there's some, even in the Republican ranks, who find this whole Biden impeachment gambit distracting or counterproductive. I'm not one of them. I'm not one of them. Regardless of whether or not you think the Biden hillbilly crime family will ever be held accountable under the law, the pursuit of holding them accountable under the law is worthwhile. This innocent bystanderism cannot stand. And so Republicans are politically, morally, and legally duty-bound to pursue this, based on everything that we know to be true about the business dealings of the president and his family and his pathological lying about it. The circumstantial case against Joe Biden for impeachment and, as Bobulinski suggested, for prosecution under federal criminal law is actually quite strong. May not be there yet, where a prosecutor would take a gambit and belief that he could pass the reasonable doubt test, but it's within the range of discussion, that's for sure. And I'll tell you, I enjoy Tony Bobulinski's testimony, just as I enjoyed his previous interviews.
He's great.
Because he's a West Point guy. He's combative. He's not some cake eater that's just going to sit there and take it from these, at best, mediocre intellects in Congress or anywhere else, media. So here's part of his opening statement. He used part of his opening statement to name names, and I love naming names.
Oh, yeah. And
big fan of naming names.
Goldman, Raskin.
And here's Bobulinski doing that.
Yet the same people preaching this mantra know better. They continue to lie directly to the American people without hesitation and remorse. Rep. Dan Goldman and Jamie Raskin, both lawyers, and Mr. Goldman, a former prosecutor with the SDNY from New York, will continue to lie today in this hearing and then go straight to the media to tell more lies. Hunter Biden's defense attorney, Abby Lowell, weaponizes letters to Congress to try to smear my name.
Mr. Chairman,
the cold hard facts.
Mr. Chairman.
In an attempt to save his powerfully connected client and his father, I challenge Mr. Lowell to make those claims on national television so he can be held accountable for his lies. Prior to my successful business career, I was an officer in the United States Navy. At Navy's elite Naval Nuclear Power Training Command, I later served as the command's chief technology officer.
Please proceed. I apologize for the disruption from the...
Stephen Van Sant has something to say.
It's my time, Mr. Raskin.
Yeah. But please, Mr. Bobulinski, please.
Okay.
Come to order. Mr. Bobulinski, please proceed.
Okay.
Please proceed. I apologize for the disruption from the minority.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman, save his time, but he called members of this committee liars, and I just want to know whether the order and decorum requirements of House Rule 11 apply to witnesses appearing before the committee. Does it apply or does it not?
Should I address? I don't.
Somebody hurt somebody's feelings.
There's decorum from the members. We've asked for that. There's no language that I'm aware of pertaining to a witness.
Yeah. Thank you.
Kim, should I reclaim my time? Tony Bobulinski taking the shot at Raskin and Goldman is great. By the way, I think I said West Point naval officers. You heard him say, not a West Pointer. But he had another moment where he named names. And this was new. No, Raskin and Goldman, liars, that's not new. Everybody paying any attention knows that.
And their attorneys.
And not just on this case, Abby Lowell, not just on this case, but on obviously the Russian collusion case, even in a more spectacular fashion. But Bobulinski brought up something else that we didn't know, and he named the name. The name is Ro Khanna, an unctuous Democrat socialist from California you've seen, no doubt, on the cable news talkies.
And Donalds, I'd just actually like to spend 20 seconds. If you noticed, Congressman Khanna scurried out of here very quickly, and I'm actually disgusted as I sit here that he didn't address me based on the fact that I'm sitting here in front of the world trying to testify to the truth. In October 2020, I have messages I'm willing to produce to both the Democrats and the Republicans that Ro Khanna sent to me saying, you've always demonstrated to me that you're nothing but an honest with the highest integrity individual. And I was begging for him to go on CNN and tell the world in October 2020. I have extensive emails with Congressman Ro Khanna in 2021 and 2022 where I begged him and his staff to sit down with me and look at my BlackBerry phones that the Democrats are so focused on, to hire forensics experts and go through all of the factual information I had. So the fact that he did not even address me and then scurried out of here is disgusting to me.
All right.
Tony Bobulinski, bring in the receipts, as the kids say. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. I'd like to see those emails and text messages with Ro Khanna.
Yeah, why can't we?
Well, maybe Bobulinski will make them available, or the impeachment inquiry committee will. Love it, though. Yeah, open book. Let's see it all. Here's specifically time, dates, and places. Here's personal communications. Here it all is for anybody who wants to look. And then the Democrat Socialists avert their eyes.
Yeah, anything to protect their boss, Biden. That's what the Democrats did yesterday. No, this isn't a real thing. This is a sham. We need to move on. There's other issues pressing Americans right now. I was so sick of hearing all of it.
Another... Well, right. I mean, and you have the performative silliness. Jared Moskovitz.
Oh, I know that.
Who's another
mask? What is it?
Who's another hysteric. Yeah, he showed up in a Putin mask.
Congressman, can you explain why you're wearing?
Oh, I just came to thank James Comer for taking all of our intelligence and using it in the committee. Maybe he can come see the technology in our grocery stores. Thank you.
Congressman, isn't this committee kind of mature?
Yeah, I love that one reporter. You think it's immature to be wearing a Putin mask? You clown.
Going through all our intelligence, maybe he can invite Putin over to see the technology in our grocery stores.
I know. What does that mean, Dan? What are you talking about?
So anyway.
Our new price guns. Okay.
So this is very much akin to Stephen KFC Cohen, the Democrat socialist from Tennessee back in the previous administration. That would be the Trump years. Eating KFC chicken while waiting for Barr to show up to a hearing that the House Democrats, socialists, wanted him to attend to talk more about the Mueller report and his decision not to pursue charges based on the Mueller report.
Right. He showed up for one of the days.
The point is the pathetic, whatever they would call showmanship or you know, the sort of the carnival atmosphere and yet carrying on about who's a serious person and these are existential, you know, these issues represent existential threats and please don't waste our valuable time with political theater. We have the substance of the American people's interests to serve and so on and so forth. And then you see this spectacle yet again. Bob Alinsky also was fortunate that AOC is on this committee.
Right. And she
and he's also fortunate, as we all are, that AOC thinks that she is a lot brighter than she actually is. And so they had an exchange where AOC thought she had the gotcha question. And see if you think she got Tony Bobulinski.
Is it your testimony today that you personally witnessed President Joe Biden commit a crime?
I believe the fact that he was sitting with me while I was putting together a
business
deal.
Did you witness the president commit a crime? Is it your testimony today?
Yes.
And what crime do you have you witnessed?
How much time do I have to go through it?
It is simple. You name the crime. Did you watch him steal something?
Corruption statutes, RICO, and conspiracy.
What is it? What is Sarah, what is the crime, annoying. Sir?
You
specifically.
You asked me to answer the question. I answered the question.
No.
RICO, you're obviously not familiar with. Corruption
Excuse
statutes.
Excuse me, sir. Excuse Sarah. Me, sir. Excuse me, sir. RICO is not a crime. It is a category. What is
it's
the
category
crime?
Of crimes that you're then charged?
You have charges.
A long hundred.
You have charges, sir. Yeah. Please
the name the exact statute
sir,
under RICO.
Yes.
Well, it's funny. In this committee room, everyone's not here. There's over 18
All right, sir. I reclaim my
lawyers
time.
That went to law school.
Time. I'll
leave it.
I'll leave it up to them to provide these specific citations for the statutory charges under RICO. He also mentioned FARA, the Foreign Agent Registration Act.
Yeah.
These are all that's why I say there's a circumstantial case to flesh out here, not just against Hunter, which is obvious and multifaceted, but against the big guy, too, since we have the money, which was documented again by Byron Donalds. We've talked about this before. It's been presented before. It was presented again. You have to present these things again and again. You have to provide the receipts again and again. You have to pound the issue. You may be bored with it. I may be bored with it. But it has penetrated such that the American people, a majority of them, understand that Biden was part of this corrupt enterprise and the head of this hillbilly crime family. What they haven't connected the dots necessarily to is this beyond sort of the normal graph that the American people have become accustomed to from both parties, such that they appreciate the threat it poses, how disqualifying this this influence peddling operation was, and how compromised Joe Biden is just in terms of the potential, much less any reality that could be demonstrated, which is an open question. But I mean, this is not a trivial matter. This is not something where you just shrug your shoulders, wave it off, say, let's just focus on the border. We can't do two or three things at once. Wrong. This must be done, what the House Republicans are doing. Clay in Libertyville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Woo! Did somebody turn up the thermostat or did Tony Bobulinski just walk in?
Yeah.
Love that.
Right.
Love that. You know,
by the way, one other observation on AOC. Did you see him steal something? Wait a second. Stealing's not a crime for you, is it? Anyway, I digress. Go ahead.
Say what you want about the Democrats. They know how to circle the wagons. They do. They know how to blindly stand up there and defend a guy who is clearly in the face of evidence being thrown at him, guilty? Why can't the Republicans pull it all together, band together, stand together, and come after hard? And exactly what you were saying, Dan, why can't they have multiple issues going on at the same point here? Do not let go of the border. Stay with this. Stay with the border. Stay with everything else. Now is our offense time. We need to be on offense. We need to hit them hard. November is coming up. Let's go.
Yeah, I agree. Thanks for the call. And the last thing you do is think like, oh, look at the polls. You know, we just have to not make a mistake. If we just don't do anything, and then everybody will focus on Biden and we'll win. So we just need to run out the clock. No, you don't. You need to continue to play offense. You can need to continue to score, to use a tortured sports metaphor, which I'm allowed to do, and I'm the only one when it comes to politics. But so exactly right. Continue to press the advantage. And it's not just because it's a political advantage. It's also because it happens to be the right and proper thing to do, given all that we know about the dealings of this hillbilly crime family.
And if, according to AOC, if RICO's not a crime, then she should call for Fannie Willis to dismiss all charges against Donald Trump.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. All right.
Michael, one other fun zinger at the committee hearing.
Yes.
Was Florida representative. Boy, they must be interesting when if they get the Florida Congressional Caucus gets together and Jared Moskovitz and Michael Waltz have exchanges. Michael Waltz took judicial notice of something that the flatulence-saddled Eric Swalwell said.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I find it incredibly rich Mr. Swalwell is going to come to this committee and lecture us about how China penetrates our government. I think that's something he may know a thing or two about, but let's talk about how China's penetrated the highest levels of this government, including this president and this White House, because I think the visual is incredibly important.
Yeah, I'm thinking my visual right now is of that Chi-Com honeypot penetrating Eric Swalwell, because I think that's how he takes it.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission: to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. This is getting so good, we're going to have our producer Justin come up with theme music. Simple questions of judicial nominees with Louisiana Senator John Kennedy. Maybe we'll just shorten that to simple questions with John Kennedy.
Are we going to answer questions from John Kennedy?
If you want to answer questions from John Kennedy, then I would suggest two things. Brush up on your and you're a judicial nominee, by the way, which is the focus here. Brush up on the U.S. Constitution and basic principles of law that a first year law student would have learned. And be able to explain your professional record. It doesn't seem like that's a lot to ask of nominees for federal judicial appointments. But it turns out, at least with the Biden nominees, it has been a real problem. because most of his nominees, at least those that have had to face down John Kennedy, have not shown great knowledge of the Constitution and have had a difficult time defending their record as an attorney or judge. It's really something. And we've got another installment. And it's right out of Chicago. Nancy Maldonado. She is a sitting federal district court judge for the Northern District of Illinois. She's from Skokie. She went to Harvard, Columbia Law. Very impressive. She is now and she's only been on the bench for not even 2 years. She got nominated and confirmed for this federal district court position. Now she's nominated for a position, a judgeship on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. Now we're really getting into some heavy business here. You're making law, essentially, at the appellate court level. So John Kennedy just had a simple question about some of her work product. One particular representation she made to one particular court over one particular issue. And this is how that went for a nominee to the federal appellate court bench.
When you were a partner in your law firm, you volunteered to write a brief on behalf of the Brady Center. You wrote the brief, and this is what you said. You volunteered for this. You weren't being paid. Is that right?
This was a pro bono case that one of my partners brought in, yes.
You said, quote, assault weapons may be banned because they're extraordinarily dangerous and are not appropriate for legitimate self-defense purposes, close quote. Tell me what you meant by assault weapons.
Thank you, Senator Kennedy. Just to clarify, there, I was local counsel.
But you wrote the brief. Tell me what you meant by assault weapons.
Senator Kennedy, actually, I did not write the brief. The brief was written by...
you signed the brief, though, didn't
correct.
You?
Correct. I signed the brief.
When you sign a brief, you're testifying to the court that everything in it is true, right?
Yes. Okay. That, and I
so they're your words in terms of the court, right?
Well, you're correct, Senator Kennedy. Okay. I would never
tell me what you meant by assault weapons.
So I am not a gun expert, and at the time, that brief, I think, was about 10 years.
You were giving the court advice about, say, ban assault weapons. You told the court you were an expert. Just tell me what you wanted to ban.
Senator, sitting here today, as I said, I did not write that brief. I was local counsel.
Sign the brief.
I understand. At the time,
tell me what you wanted to ban. That's all I want to know, Judge.
I don't remember the exact definition of assault weapons in the ordinance that was at issue.
So you submitted a brief to the an appellate brief. You signed it, and you don't know what. And you said abolish assault weapons, and you don't know what you wanted them to abolish.
Senator, at the time that I signed the brief, I read the brief because our Supreme Court required someone, an Illinois bar member, to sign the brief. I was not responsible for researching the content.
You were responsible for the brief.
Absolutely. And sitting here today, I do not remember the characteristics that were cited in the ordinance for the assault weapons ban. It's not an area of practice that I have specialized in. I'm sure 10 years ago, I could have answered your question.
And
but
Judge,
sitting here today,
you think Senator, you deserve to be promoted?
Expired.
With this record.
Senator, I stand by my record.
Of course you
I
do.
I stand by my record.
Of course you do. I stand by my record. I stand in lieu of being unable to defend my record. I just going to tell you I stand by
stand
it.
Stand by it.
Of course you do. You know, I know there's a general understanding of how important the federal courts are, particularly the Supreme Court. And that factors into how people think about presidential candidates in particular. And you have these, you know, spectacles for Supreme Court nominees before the Senate Judiciary Committee ever since Robert Bork. And we'll have more coming. But there's not this, I mean, and so there's a general appreciation, but it's not focused enough. And we talk about this at the local level in terms of Tim Evans and the Cook County court system, for example, and how they treat repeat violent offenders. These federal district court appointments and appellate court appointments, this is serious business, as we see playing out across all sorts of issues, particularly right now, border security, don't we? And all things related to immigration. So, I mean, Kennedy is doing an incredible service and doing it in such a accessible way. Simple questions about fundamental principles of law, about our founding documents. Since you're an appointee, a potential appointee to a federal judgeship, maybe you should know something about interpreting our fundamental documents, or founding documents. And I wish more people would pay attention, which is why we platform his exchanges, because they're so good and they're so illustrative of how mediocre, maybe, you know, technically writing briefs and so forth, but in terms of the quality of thinking, of critical thinking, the quality of jurisprudence you're going to get from somebody like a Nancy Maldonado, and so many other examples, and I've got them all right here, just in the last 18 months. And what that means for the rule of law in this country. I mean, thinking about how this is playing out in Fulton County and Manhattan and D.C., so this is so important. I wish we had a nominee who was a little bit more articulate in this area, since he's the target of so much of the malfeasance here and the lack of critical thinking and the politicization and the weaponization, everyone's favorite word. Kennedy is exposing, and by the way, you know, Ivy League grads, oh, Harvard to Columbia Law. Wow, what a resume, until you hear her talk and try and defend a simple and try and answer a simple question about a brief she filed, which is a representation of her view to the court. What do you want to ban? I have no idea. What did you want to ban? And the answer is, I have no idea.
I stand by my...
And you want her to sit on the Seventh Circuit?
Oh, boy.
I mean, it's astounding. Ralph and Rantoul, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
All right, the answer to your question, what do you want to ban? Firearms. But you just can't say it out loud, which is why I suggest a mashup of the following two tunes that would cover Kennedy's questioning of these appointees. Be a mashup of If I Only Had a Brain from The Wizard of Oz and The Eurythmics, Would I Lie to You?
All right, Ralph, thanks for the call. Brian in St. John, Indiana.
Hey, good morning. And to paraphrase, did she just literally say, I signed the court document, but I'm not responsible? These people are just
basically
stupid or arrogant.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Thanks for the call, Brian.
A little bit of both, maybe.
Well, I didn't write the brief. Well, you understand when you sign a brief, you're making a representation. Yeah, that's correct, Senator, but I didn't write it. Oh, so you're not responsible for it? You don't have to explain it. You don't have to explain why you signed a brief that represents a viewpoint and a legal argument. You don't have to own it now because it's some time in the past. If this was such a pressing issue that you agreed to be local counsel on this matter, then why'd you do it? And if it's something that you're not an, I'm not an expert in this area, well, then why'd you get involved? This is obviously something that was important to you. How was it important to you? I mean, you could delve a lot deeper, but I just like him continuing to pepper her with what you want to ban, especially when she's trying to bob and weave, and Kennedy's a good enough lawyer to hold someone's feet to the fire when they're obviously trying to squirm away. I'll give you another example, just because these are so fun and they should not be forgotten. Memory hold. Listen to this. John Kennedy questioning a Biden federal district court judge nominee, Sarah Hill. Simple question that you would think somebody who was going to sit on the federal bench would know.
The difference between a stay order and an injunction.
A stay order would prohibit. An injunction would restrain the parties from taking action. A stay order. I'm not sure that I actually can give you the.
Okay.
Judicial nominee. What?
Mm-hmm. Oh. How about Kennedy questioning Biden federal judicial nominee Charnel Jelkengren about, you know, sort of the fundamental portions of the United States Constitution? Tell me what these articles that detail the formation of the federal government, tell me what they cover.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and congratulations to all of you. Judge, on the far end, tell me what Article 5 of the Constitution does.
Article 5 is not coming to mind at the moment.
Okay. How about Article 2?
Neither is Article 2.
Okay. Do you know what purposivism is?
In my 12 years as an assistant attorney general and my 9 years serving as a judge, I was not faced with that precise question. We are the highest trial court in Washington state, so I'm frequently faced with issues that I'm not familiar with, and I thoroughly review the law, our research, and apply the law to the facts presented to me.
Well, you're going to be faced with it if you're confirmed. I can assure you of that.
Uh-huh. Justice on the state Supreme Court in Washington state, on the bench for 9 years, and so on and so forth. Oh, it's an impressive resume. Do you know what Article 2 is? That's not. Do you ever have that dream where you went to a federal judicial nomination confirmation hearing, a committee hearing, and you forgot everything that you learned in law school or should have? Article 2, you mean that details the executive branch? Yeah, that's not coming to me. Article 5, amending the Constitution. That's not coming to me. It sounds familiar.
What about the Bill of Rights? Well, I don't know.
Purposivism. We've talked about it before because we played this clip before. The simple legal concept that you interpret statutes as they, based on the intentions of the drafter. It's sort of like almost a strict constructionism. I mean, this is not deep, dense, theoretical content we're talking about here. Can't defend or don't know anything, apparently, about the country's founding documents. Can't defend their own records. And we're supposed to, the robe and genuflect before your honors. Are you serious? The disintegration of yet another fundamental institution to our republic because of this cacistocracy that we have. Lewis on the South Side.
Riddle me this, Batman. What we have here is a failure to communicate.
Yeah.
A movie.
It's a failure to think is what it is.
and then an odor of mendacity? Odor of mendacity.
All right, cool hand, Lewis. Thanks for the call. Jordan in Antioch.
Good morning. If you listen to the exchange between Maldonado and Mr. Kennedy, she gave you all the information you needed to know about what the requirements are to be an Illinois judge. When she said all the Illinois Supreme Court required was that somebody that was bar certified sign this. I didn't read it. I don't know what's in it. I was just told that if I want to sit here in front of you to be nominated for the 7th District, I should sign this. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's probably a good read on it. Thanks for the call, Jordan. Right. I mean, I'm for banning guns just like everybody else. And this is an opportunity for me to put a marker down to get in good with the people you want to get in good with to advance my career. I don't need to understand the issue. I don't need to take any time to think about the legal implications. Just sign your name and we'll get back to you. But you're going places. Judge Maldonado. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So Uber and Lyft announced that they're pulling out of Minneapolis and essentially putting a combined 10,000 workers, drivers, out of work. Why? Because the Minneapolis City Council, in its infinite wisdom, has mandated that rideshare drivers be paid the local minimum wage of $15.57 per hour.
That's not going to fly.
Well, it's not going to fly for Uber and Lyft, so you're not getting a rideshare ride in the city of Minneapolis. Now, this is not dissimilar from Chicago with BLM Brands' insistence on phasing in the ever-increasing minimum wage for tipped workers. You think the city council and BLM Brandon, their infinite wisdom, controlled by the new Marxists, as they both are, you don't think they'll apply these same mandates to rideshare drivers? I mean, they'll apply it everywhere they can. It's not dissimilar to what California did, too, with their refusal to... treatment of rideshare drivers, not as ICs, but as employees, that legislative maneuver. So it's just more of the disintegration of the city. Cities, plural, I should say, because as we know, you can put the mayor of Minneapolis and the mayor of Chicago and the mayor of New York and into Minneapolis and the mayor of Chicago to Memphis to New Orleans. Pick a major metropolitan area with more than 300,000 people. Interchangeable politicians, because they're pursuing the same policies.
So you think it'll happen here?
And so the same disintegration is going to occur. Well, it is happening here. I mean, it's like, when is it going to happen? It's happening.
Well, no, I met with Uber and Lyft rideshares.
Well, why wouldn't it?
They're going to make a demand that they make minimum wage.
Why wouldn't it? Now, maybe, I mean, we saw this in Seattle. Maybe once somebody sees a real cost being paid, that there'll be a little bit of pushback from the affected parties, like Seattle waitstaff that revolted against the increase in the minimum wage for them in Seattle, because after it was implemented, they were taking home less money.
Yeah.
But it just, people have to be personally punished to a great extent in metropolitan areas before there is any real pushback. And in Chicago and Cook County, it seems like the only thing that can really generate a sustained response is if you increase taxes on pop. That's about that. This is about the closest thing to a revolt in the last 50 years we've seen in Cook County.
Well, that and then the illegals that are taking over our public spaces. There's a big revolt on that, too.
Right. But the difference between the illegals and the pop tax that Tony imposed is the pop tax was repealed. The sanctuary city designation, sanctuary county, sanctuary state designation, the expenditure of public resources on persons in this country illegally, that's not stopping.
No, that's not going away. Anytime soon, it's our new normal, unless we vote this people out of office.
For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by our friend Chris Whalen. He is an investment banker out of New York and the author of books, the editor of the Institutional Risk Analyst. Chris, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
So how's it going in New York? I know our Eric Adams made some noise a couple weeks ago about, you know, maybe we should slightly amend our sanctuary city declaration to say, except for violent offenders in this country illegally, and on that score we could work with ICE, but I don't know if that's going anywhere, or New York is going anywhere. But New Yorkers seem to be intent on going somewhere. I saw a survey the other day that 60% of Manhattan wants to leave.
Yeah, especially if you have young children. It's not a very good venue. Yeah, I've been going through Bob Caro's biography of Robert Moses, which tells you about progressive New York. And we're kind of undoing all of that. We're going back a century, the kind of chaos and unrest on the streets, insecurity, all the bad words, right? So, you know, we live up in Westchester County. We left New York in 2021. And this is kind of a good compromise. We still have access to the city if we need it. But you don't want to be there all the time because it's dangerous. If you're in the box between 14th Street and 59th Street at night, it is a really dodgy situation. And they're trying to get the police back on the subways and everything else because they have to because there's so much violence. But I just think it's going to be very dicey to make it work unless we get a change in political leadership. And that's not going to happen.
Do you have any shelters there with illegals in your county?
In Westchester County, I'm sure there are, probably down county in White Plains and areas where they have the facilities. We're at the top of Westchester County. I could walk over the Bear Mountain Bridge if I have to. So, you know, the city is a mess. And we have a constitutional right to housing. You got to remember that New York is the lead progressive state when it comes to giving stuff away at public expense. And so people show up and they say, hey, give me housing. Eric Adams has a problem because he gets sued if he refuses to give them housing. But, you know, you walk around Grand Central, you see the Latino illegal immigrants hanging outside the Roosevelt Hotel smoking dope and, assaulting people. They've been systematically going around the city. Engaging in very organized criminal activity. So you wonder, you know, who are these people? Were they really refugees? Or were they just organized criminal gangs who came into the United States and are now living at our expense?
And there was this story out of Brooklyn, or Queens it was, of a squatter woman.
I saw that. That was great.
A woman inherits this house. Adele Andalaro inherits this house, and she, from a parent who had passed away, she is going to sell it, and she finds a guy or two guys living in there. She tries to get them out, and she gets arrested for unlawful eviction. So then we find the story developing yesterday, New York Post reporting. Some neighbors, of course, knew this was going on, and then when they saw the story of her getting arrested, they came over, and they're the one guy saying, you know, I'm just trying to get some answers of why they think they live there. You know, what you really have is, some people getting a little edgy and the prospect of more vigilantism. And this is what happens when you turn your community over to people who don't play by the rules, as they say. And this is how it's characterized, too. So not just that story, which I know is a longstanding policy in New York, just like it is in Chicago with these squatters' rights, the squatters' rights nonsense. But also Daniel Penny. So Daniel Penny's back in court. This is the characterization of ABC News of Daniel Penny. former Marine Daniel Penny to stand trial in October for choking homeless man to death on New York City subway. Is that really what the story was? I mean, it sounds like he just did this, cavalierly for no particular reason, rather than intervening to protect other passengers on that train and trying to restrain this individual who is behaving erratically with no intent, obviously, to kill him. But this is how it's characterized when you intervene on behalf of your fellow man to stop somebody from violating their rights. And it's the same thing here. The person who's playing by the rules, who has the deed to the property, she gets arrested. The person trying to stop somebody who is endangering other people's safety, he's the problem. It is 180 degrees, and until you reverse that, fully reverse it 180 degrees, I don't see much hope for any of these big cities.
Well, of course, but remember, this started with a progressive intent, a positive intent to help people. Many of those homeless people, many of whom you don't ever see, Dan, they live underground, okay? It's like Las Vegas. You would be astounded at how many people live underground in New York that you never see, except when it rains. So, originally we had facilities to help people that had mental problems, for example, and that should not be on the street. Now we house them on the subway because the progressives, including Mr. Cuomo, discovered that it's too expensive to provide these services, especially when you have an economy where the wealthy and the business community are leaving. They've been invited to leave, right? So who's going to pay for all of this? And the answer is they can't. So the great progressive state, New York, has been slowly getting rid of all of the mental hospitals and other facilities that we had for the unfortunate. Where are they going to go? They live on the subway. They're sleeping on the subway. So that's the issue, is you don't yet have a catalyst politically in the city that says we've had enough. And in the 70s, that started in the black community, ironically enough, with Mayor Dinkins, who I knew. He was a good friend and member of the Lotus Club. And I think that, until you have that kind of indignation and anger on the part of urban residents, you're not going to have change. That's it. We flipped politics upside down, Remember 100 years ago, we would have been talking about the rise of Tammany Hall. But the Irish and the Italians and everybody else that were part of that group, including my family, wanted order. They wanted a nice city. They didn't want degeneracy, right? Now we have the opposite. We have progressive politicians who don't really have a political base, but the cities have been abandoned. So these people think they can do whatever they want. Look at you guys with the referendum you just had on the transfer tax. to God. So they think they can pay for stuff with these punitive tax programs, but no, people leave. They just get up and go. And that's what's going to kill this. It really is. So northern tier cities, I think, are in a big problem for long-term historical reasons. I wrote about this in my Ford book, but also for short-term reasons, COVID, other changes, right? We just had a 40% discount print on a rent-stabilized building in Manhattan. Think about what that says about all the banks in Manhattan that own that paper, okay? 40%, right? That's what the progressive mentality has done to New York. And by the way, Marty Greenberg, the chairman of the FDIC, is getting sued by one of the buildings that had a loan in the old Signature Bank portfolio. And he has no intention of selling those loans. He's going to just keep them inside the FDIC's bank insurance fund. It's progressive politics. Right?
When do you think Letitia James is going to move into 40 Wall Street? Seize Trump's properties.
Well,
he hasn't.
Look,
until
again,
Monday.
The Donald often suffers from self-inflicted wounds, but I think he's going to win in November. The numbers are actually better this time around, much better. And Biden is just fading away. If the Fed doesn't do something by June, I think, Biden is really cooked. Look at gasoline prices. You guys were just talking about that.
Yep.
That's the pain point for Americans right now.
The expectation is from this week's activity that and Jay Powell's pronouncements that the market still believes three rate cuts that are in the offing this year. What do you think?
Depends on the numbers. If we get a print that shows inflation rising again, they'll wait. If the big change that's coming from the Fed is kind of May, June, they're going to slow down the shrinkage of the portfolio. Why? Because the federal debt is growing. I asked a funny question on Twitter yesterday, which got all the economists excited. I said, is there a ratio between the Fed balance sheet and the total federal debt? Do they, like, have a number in the back of their minds at the Fed? And the answer is kind of, sort of. You know, you ask questions like that, and you never get a real answer. But it was funny. I was driving by the Fed building. I was just down in Washington this week meeting with some people on the Trump transition team. And they're building at the Federal Reserve Board, like, you know, we're going to, I don't know what we're going to do, launch space shuttles from there or something. You know, this is the most influential and important institution in Washington. You can't believe what they're doing on Constitution Avenue. It's like they're building a city between the two old Fed buildings. It's very funny.
No
lack of money in Washington.
Well, right. I mean, that's where the printing press is, and they're going to need it because the big guy's 2024 federal budget proposal is $7.3 trillion against a backdrop of $35 trillion in debt and another $100 trillion in unfunded liabilities.
I think what's going to happen ultimately is that when we hit the wall and Congress is forced to do something on spending, they're going to end up coming up with a national sales tax. And then the fight will be over getting rid of the income tax, which, of course, will drive the progressives insane. But that's the only way you could fund this country. You have to tax sales. You can't tax income because everybody hides their income.
So we're going to go full Europe, and there'll be the left proposing a VAT tax and fighting any tax relief on the other side, on the work side.
Correct. So by rights, we should get rid of the corporate income tax. We should limit any, you know, income tax for individuals to a punitive level for billionaires, and just, you know, basically fund this country off of revenue from the point of sale. The only thing that makes sense, you know. But we'll get there. Remember, the old Hemingway quote, how did you go broke? Little by little, and then all at once.
The sun also rises. I remember it well. But the sun is setting on big city America, and maybe America too, if we're going to go full European malaise. Chris Whalen, investment banker, chairman of Whalen Global Advisors, author of Ford Men, From Inspiration to Enterprise, and editor for the institutional risk analyst, Christopher Whalen. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
Have a great day.
You too, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Quick update on the Cook County State's Attorney's race, and then get to an interesting decision by a U.S. District Court judge in Illinois, since we were talking about judges earlier with John Kennedy's querying of another federal judge in Illinois, Nancy Maldonado, who's a nominee for the Seventh Circuit, Biden nominee for the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. The case involves illegal immigrants and whether or not they can legally own and have a right to carry guns in America. Very interesting because it cuts across political lines. The vote totals coming in by neighborhood, doing some analysis here. As I mentioned before, what you generally see, although there's some exceptions as we're pouring through the numbers, you generally see that Eileen Burke is outperforming Vallis in general, but most particularly in sort of her base camp wards where she needs to outperform Vallis. And Harris is generally underperforming Brandon Johnson in the city as we're going neighborhood by neighborhood. And that seems to be a recipe to indicate that Eileen Burke will hold and she will be the nominee for Cook County State's Attorney and likely the next Cook County State's Attorney.
What about the suburbs of Cook County? Like, you know, because so my friend was at Clayton Harris's event and was in the back room when Tony Preckwinkle walked in with her two bodyguards and said, "You are not conceding tonight. We have, with my information, I have 109,000 plus mail-in ballots that need to be counted, and most of them are coming from the south suburbs. So you're going to win this race."
Okay.
I'm just repeating.
Maybe.
And they were shocked, like, oh, my God, this election is going to be stolen. This is going to be all of a sudden. How are they come up with all these ballots? I mean, I know I'm naive, and I might need be the one who needs to wake up. But I just want a fair election, and this makes me so nervous because I can't stand mail-in ballots.
A fair election. There we go again.
And who's going to – I know. I mean, just as an American citizen, I was just hoping, like many people, that we've, you know, fair elections. And I just – I know they're going to start counting the ballots tomorrow, the 66,000 from Chicago, but I want to make sure that it's secure. Like, people are checking the signatures, making sure that person – like, clean the voter rolls. Like, anybody – who knows? If somebody died, they can, you know, dead people vote in every election in the city of Chicago. But I was just hoping that maybe this time it'd be different.
Mm-hmm. Okay. They stole it. They're going to steal it. I'm seeing this on Twitter, getting some calls. They're going to steal it. Who's the they?
Tony Preckwinkle.
Oh. Who is Clayton Harris running against? Is Eileen Burke a conservative who's relying on the Illinois Republican Party? Or is she a Prague from a different tribe? Is there an answer to that question or no? Yeah, I didn't think so. That's the answer to all of this, all these histrionics about stealing elections and pretending there's such a thing as a fair election in Cook County. Since when? And as I've said often, the problem with Cook County is not the dead voters, it's the live ones who are dead from the neck up. And the litmus tests for Burke have nothing to do with whether she ekes out this election. And this mindless sort of hope and change rap that's being peddled is just that, mindless. Based on what? What's the hope and change for? Because you like an identitarian from this tribe more than an identitarian from another tribe? When is somebody going to do something? Everybody wants to be saved. I mean, this entire city and state wants to be saved from some Godot that's just off stage. You can't even process what's happening. Every cycle, every election, have to listen to the same cant and platitudes and recitation of you know, laments, generic laments, the woe is me, these are our choices, they're going to steal it. Who's the they? I have no idea. The they's on both sides. Every side. I just want things to get better. I'm a good person. I'm paying attention. I'm common sense. I mean, right. It's just so gosh darn frustrating to listen to people who've been around the city for decades and seemingly it's Groundhog Day every election day. Ron on the South Side.
Hey, Dan. Yeah, well, it's very frustrating, but Dan, just from listening to you, I mean, what do you suggest? I know you don't suggest people vote for a political hack. Bob the Rick. And the reason I say that, there's a gentleman, you know, I listen to talk radio, and these people are talking about, oh, we're going to become Republicans. And do what? See, that's the problem. I mean, all of these Democrats are the same. I do want Burke to win because I just have a total disdain for Preckwinkle and his Chicago teacher. But, I mean, I don't think you suggest people shouldn't have voted. I was glad to see that the transfer tax was defeated. But you know what it is, Dan? And people, because it's total frustration in the black
community, even with most communities, with the Democrat Party. But guess what? The Republican Party, now I'm starting to come around and realize they offer nothing. Maybe a little something on the national level. You mentioned it. They didn't put anything into the investing kids. So, you know, I'm not going to criticize people that maybe go with Burke.
That's not my point, Ron. It's not criticizing people who voted for Burke or criticizing people who voted for Vallis. That's not the point. The point is, don't tell me you're making up ground when you're running in place. I see you running in place and you're telling me you're covering ground. You're not.
So you say don't run at all. I mean,
what is your suggestion? No, what I say is, this is what you have produced, the collective you. This is what we have produced. And what you're going to get is running in place. And to the extent that I'm wrong, it's real simple. Here's a two-prong litmus test for Burke if she holds on. Do something to challenge sanctuary county designation and Preckwinkle by saying, even if you just said something like Adams said in New York, that with respect to violent offenders, I'm working with ICE. And I don't care what Tony Preckwinkle has to say about it. Let's hear her say that. Is that too much to ask to consummate this fact-free hope that people have for change? And number two, 26,000% increase in appeals for criminals being held over for trial, violent offenders, accused violent offenders, in many cases, repeat accused violent offenders, such that the Illinois Supreme Court is intervening now to set up new rules to manage this explosion in caseload, which was entirely predictable. So what do you have to say?
Okay.
What do you have to say, Eileen Burke, about Jelly Belly's purge law? Propose some reforms that you think the General Assembly should take up and put them on the dime. That would be evidence. And if you don't get that from Burke, if she becomes the placeholder I expect her to be based on her hackneyed political rhetoric through the entirety of this campaign and her running scare from identitarians, and maybe she's actually an identitarian, maybe she's just vacuous and she was told by consultants, these are the things you have to say. I don't know which one it is, but she's a coward regardless. So let's see if she finds some courage if she were to get elected. And the last thing is to say, and if it does turn out the way that I anticipate it will turn out, then thinking about that, we only had 8 years to think about doing something better than Kim Fox, and this is what we came up with. We came up with it. Not was foisted upon us. We came up with it. So now you got 4 years to say, what can we do to improve on Eileen Burke? What can we do to improve on Johnson? Just like we had 4 years with Lightfoot and 8 years after with Rahm. And we can never think about what can we do to actually move rather than run in place and pretend we're moving.
Okay, but Dan, let me just say one last thing. Okay, but see, those positions that you're talking about was not going to go over in the Democrat primary. And for me, what I've come to the conclusion is what's worse than the Democrat Party and their policy are the real cowards. The real do-nothings are the Republican. Dan,
I get it.
That position would have been more appealing to Republicans. Until we get an alternative to look, that she was not going to be successful running in the Democrat with those positions. But at this point, I have almost a disdain more for Republicans now, even more for Democrats, because they are the real cowards. They are the real cowards.
100% agree. We absolutely do. We absolutely do. Thanks for the call, Ron. I agree 100%. But the response is we can't do it now because we have to be politically savvy. We can't make an argument now because we have to be politically savvy. We can't take any risks now because we have to be politically savvy. So we just need to go with the flow. And you go with the flow to what destination? When is it the right time to offer an alternative vision? When is it the right time to make an argument that goes against consensus? Well, why is it so easy for the left to make all kinds of absurd arguments that have that start out with virtually no support, like men playing girls' sports, and yet they are lashed to the masts on that issue because they've developed a constituency around it. And they are prosecuting and fighting tooth and nail to advance that flag, despite its unpopularity. And Republicans won't even make arguments or use political power where they're in situations when their positions are popular. So when is the right time to do anything other than wait for somebody to pick you up and carry you to safety and public office?
So if you lived here and were able to vote, you wouldn't have voted? I mean, you would have pulled a Republican ballot in the primary?
I will never pull a Democrat ballot.
That was hard to do. I didn't want to do it, but I did it, and I voted for a lame burn.
Well, that's fine. That's not right. That's not my point.
Watch Rome burn. I know the only difference. The only difference between her and Clayton Harris is, you know, the felony, $300 or $1,000. That's it. But it's something. I don't know.
Gary, Evergreen Park.
Yeah, I just wanted to call in and say every time you think there's going to be a change because everybody's complaining about all the carjackings, all the robberies. I live near Beverly, just five doors away from Mount Greenwood. My wife's on this chat line with other U of I parents, and all they talk about is voting for Democrats. That's all they do. There's even though you hear people talking about it and complaining about it, they wouldn't even dream of pulling a Republican ballot. And I start to think maybe all hope is lost in this state.
Thanks, Gary. Greg, Jefferson Park.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. You know, up here in the 45th Ward, we've got, we're going to have a new Democratic committeeman, this communist, Michael Rabbit. Not that the other guy was all that great or anything, but the Republican Party, I've been to a couple meetings, talked to the committeemen, and she tells me, I'm like, you know, when are you guys going to put somebody up for alderman? A Republican will never get, you know, elected in this ward, so we're not doing anything. And I mean, you know, it's like they're not doing anything, and this is what you got. Now, instead of getting a, you know, pseudo-central guy on the Democrat side who is actually in the Air Force, in the Air Force Reserves and stuff, you've got this lunatic leftist who is going to do everything he can to progress our lovely mayor's agenda and the rest of them. It's sickening. You guys have a good one.
Thanks for the call, Greg. By the way, in terms of Tony Preckwinkle's, you know, I got all these votes in the Southland. Tony Preckwinkle, by the way, is not like a particularly talented politician, much less like machine leader. I don't know where people get off on this. Tony Preckwinkle's power is the public sector unions. The public sector unions are in charge, so she's the figurehead. But she is not Michael Madigan. She is not Ed Burke. She is not Old Mayor Daley. She is not a machine politician who moves elections because of her willpower and her turning of dials and pulling of levers and political strategies.
She thinks she is.
I don't care what she thinks. I'm telling you what she actually is. So to that point, here's the actual distribution of outstanding ballots. 136,000 outstanding Dem ballots. They're all from the Southland, and so you're going to win this, Clayton Harris. 93,000 are from the city. About 5,000, less than 5,000, are from Rich, Thornton, Calumet, Bloom Township. 13,000 are from Southside Zips and Black Wards. 16,000 are from Near North Zips, Lincoln Park, Loop, Lakeview. So we've got it all figured out. She's not number crunching. She doesn't run campaigns. She's a totem of the public sector unions, just like Brandon Johnson is. Frick's sake.
And Brandon Johnson still thinks that Bring Chicago Home might win.
They're just saying that. I mean, Brandon Johnson may believe it because he's a dope, but I mean,
he's the best community organizer, Danny.
Anybody who's looking at this, and they have people on their side, the public sector unions do, who are not political dopes. They know. It's just to keep up appearances. We're going to continue to fight this, blah, blah, blah. It's the same bull jive you heard from Jelly Belly when his graduated income tax increase referendum failed. The same happy horse pucky you heard from him. So you should be familiar with it. Everybody should be familiar with it.
And we'll know April 2nd.
Tom in Blue Island.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. So, Dan, you're not gonna like this, but I got to throw it out at you. As far as what Amy said is concerned, for the life of me, I can't figure out when you have mail-in balloting, because we're hearing from all the Republican intelligentsia that we have to accept it. It's here to stay, and there's nothing we can do. Okay. Is there a reason that you have all this time for your mail-in votes that they can't be obligated to be in 1 week early so they can be verified and counted so we can have an election that's decided on the same day?
Well, I mean, of course. I'm not opposed to that. How does that offend me? You know how you get that. You have people in power that want to run a fair election. When was the last time we had that in Cook County? Not in my lifetime.
Well,
so,
right.
So you need to have people in power that want to do that, and then want to actually use the political power, risk the political capital to do that. I'd be happy to go with a national election day, like everybody says. I'd be happy to go back to a regime we'd had not that long ago
pre-COVID,
like the extension of early voting for 6 weeks and stuff. It's ridiculous. But it's like we throw out proposals of what is commonsensical and what reasonable people would agree, but reasonable people are not being represented by the unreasonable people that are getting elected.
So, Dad, here's the thing. You say it all the time, and it's true, and you can tell by the passion in your voice that we're screwed here. She kind of, you know, I grew up, the guy mentioned Mount Greenwood. I grew up in Mount Greenwood. He's talking about the houses are worth five times as much in Mount Greenwood as they were when I lived there. My parents bought their house for $18,000. So
not
there's money there, and they're just half Democrats. Here. Democrats, but so
because what did they come up under, and you know, and where do a lot of their pension payments reside, and so forth. I mean, this is the kleptocracy that we all built, and now there's a different kleptocratic tribe in charge, and the old kleptocrats don't like the new kleptocrats. Well, that's not particularly compelling to me, and it doesn't represent a paradigm shift.
Right. And so Chicago's shot. Dan, I want to try to pin you down on one statement that you
self-inflicted wounds.
I just want to pin you down on one statement that you use from time to time is who is this? Who are these people? Right. It's an amorphous statement of who are these people controlling this stuff. When you have a national election, it's supposed to be 50 individual states that vote, correct? And then they tabulate and turn in the results?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. On election day in 2020, five states chose to shut down their counts at the same time and restart them at the same time. How does that happen if there isn't some kind of coordination between these states?
Thanks for the call, Tom. I mean, I know that's out there. That requires a little bit more evidentiary basis, the stops and the starts and when they occurred in these jurisdictions. And it's not exactly uniform as it's presented. At least I haven't seen evidence that is dispositive of that issue. But I mean, do election authorities in metropolitan areas communicate and perhaps collaborate like public health authorities in different counties and states did during COVID to synchronize what they're doing? I mean, it's certainly possible, but you have to prove all that out. And to the extent they do, then states elections are state and local matters administratively. So you have to deal with the states and localities. This is what we talk about when you have to have a national Republican Party and the national campaigns have a national ballot integrity program and a national vote by mail strategy, as long as the laws are what they are in states that in particular in states that matter. I mean, this is not mysterious. And so just like taking the position of forever being jilted, I just have no empathy for it anymore. I'm sorry if that's mean or whatever. I just have no empathy for it. We've been through too much. We've seen too much. You know what the answers are. So we need to think about how we pursue getting the power to implement the answer rather than complaining or ginning up excuses about why we don't pursue the power we need to get to those answers. Matt, Southside, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, Dan. I hear the frustration in your voice. Now, I do want to say one thing. I'm like you. It's like these politicians get elected. It's like, what are they doing? You know, they're not doing anything to earn the votes that they wanted, that they needed to get. But this is what I'm saying. When I heard Lake and Riley's father basically say that her death was used as a, you know, it's being used as a political football getting tossed around, I was so angry because someone like him should be standing behind Republicans 100%. When I heard that, I honestly thought, you know what? It's going to sound terrible, but you know what? I mean, something happened to your daughter. You can't learn your lesson. You're going to sit there and, you know, act like this is a Republican issue where they're using it. You know what? They say a few eggs have to be cracked sometimes. And I'm sorry, if it was his daughter, I'd rather have it be someone like that than someone who's going to stand up and say, you know what? If my daughter has to be used as an example, let's go for it. I mean, I just feel no pity. When I heard him trying to justify, you know,
what Democrats are saying,
I'm aggravated.
I hear what you're saying, Matt. I don't want that to happen to anybody, obviously, and I know you don't either. But here's the thing, you know, like a more local example of the mentality, and it needs to be called out. This is the point. What the hell is wrong with you? Why can't anybody say that when a guy gets winged walking with his girlfriend on the street by a bullet in the hand and his response is, that's the kind of stuff that happens in big cities. Mm-hmm. That's just big city living, getting shot while you're out for a walk on the sidewalk with your girlfriend or wife. I can't remember which. What the hell is wrong with you? That guy, thankfully, because he survived and he just was injured, that statement needs to be amplified as an example to drive a conversation to say, what is the major malfunction? What is the mind virus in Chicago that you get that kind of reaction to being shot? But we don't do that. We just have conversations about personalities that and which one we're going to choose from which tribe that don't amount to anything that relates to people's quality of life in the city.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We got a call yesterday, not during the show, but to our line, not live. But it was from a trucker who, provides the kind of common sense you get from truckers, which is why we need more truckers in public office when they can find the time. But anyway, he said, here's an idea for Trump to post the $454 million bond he needs to appeal the Star Chamber imposition that was imposed in New York. Sell Mar-a-Lago. Forget allowing Letitia James to occupy the penthouse at Trump Tower. Sell Mar-a-Lago. Get, you know, $300 or $400 million for it and then demonstrate how fallacious this, you know, $18 million valuation was that was part of the claims lodged against Trump during the trial. I'll tell you what, I'm not saying he sells Mar-a-Lago, but I think he should put it up for sale just to see what the market would bear and report that publicly to cast that same cloud over this persecution at the hands of Letitia James in Manhattan.
That's a good idea.
It is a good idea. I mean, it was spawned by this truck driver's call, but I love that. What will Trump actually do? Will he turn over Trump Tower to her?
Or 40 Wall Street? What's he going to do?
I want to get the visuals of that. And then use that to, superimpose him in his penthouse there and really maybe use that, drive the illustration of the unfairness of this all and the ridiculousness of it all even more so than Shark Tank's Kevin O'Leary. Well, for more on that and other political matters, we're pleased to be joined by John Hinderaker, founder of Powerline Blog, powerlineblog.com, and Center for the American Experiment. John, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, great to be with you, Dan.
So what do you think about the approach Trump should pursue, given that it's unlikely he can put up $500 million to appeal the decision, at least in the short term?
Dan, I honestly don't know. If somebody asked me, where do you go to get $500 million in cash? I don't know the answer to that question. I've never been in that position. Some people are saying he should just walk away from Trump Tower. And, of course, part of the subtext here is that the commercial real estate market in New York City has collapsed. And whatever value any of these buildings had in, say, 2019, their value today is a lot less. And I could see some merit to the idea of walking away from Trump Tower and saying to Letitia James, okay, it's yours, you take it. What's she going to do with it?
Then he'd never get it back.
Well, he probably wouldn't get it back. No, you're right. Well, he probably wouldn't.
It's
so crazy.
It is really incredible. What's your take in terms of how Trump is handling these persecutions, particularly with the prospect that the staying in Manhattan, that the Alvin Bragg trial will begin next month and will be adjudicated before the summer. And Trump will perhaps, I think likely, be found guilty again because of the nature of the jury pool and the justice system, such as it is in New York. Is he doing enough on the front end to prepare people for that? Again, the polling that suggests it may not be a kill shot for him, but the idea of Trump convicted felon and then $500 million worth of advertising saying we can't have a convicted felon in the White House, that does seem to be a prospect, according to polling, that drives some independence off of him. And look, he's up in swing states, but these are not insurmountable leads. And so that's a real wild card in my estimation.
Well, I think you're right, Dan. I've seen the same polling that you have. And his strategy in part has been one of delay, and of course some of these prosecutions were brought, Jack Smith, waited 2 years and then he started his prosecution, clearly trying to interfere in the 2024 presidential election, and then he's foiled, by delays. The courts don't necessarily go along with the prosecutor's timetables, but I think you're right. I think it's a real problem for Trump if he's actually convicted by a jury of a crime between now and the election. And, we've seen any trial lawyer will tell you that the most important thing that he does in a trial is to pick the jury. And the most important variable in a case is who decides it. We saw that. I was in Washington, D.C., as you may remember, for a couple days of the trial of Michael Mann against Mark Stein. And everybody on Mark's side thought, wow, this trial's going really well, and it was. But at the end of the day, the jury was a Washington, D.C. jury that was thoroughly imbued with the whole global warming narrative, and the facts didn't really matter. And I think something similar is likely to happen to Trump if he goes to trial in Manhattan. Who's going to decide that case? No matter how weak the case is, it's going to be an anti-Trump jury. It's a big problem.
The House Republican impeachment inquiry and the testimony from Bob Alinsky and Jason Galanis, former business partners of Hunter Biden. Of course, we know Bob Alinsky because of his public profile over the last 4 years, starting with pre-2020 election with Tucker Carlson. There's some sort of ennui among some Republicans with respect to pursuing a Biden impeachment because, of course, it's going nowhere in the Senate. And so, the arguments. But I think it matters. And I think yesterday was a good example of why it matters. And I have no problem with unleashing Tony Bobulinski on Democrats and reminding everybody it with it, the explicit detail he has of who's of what this Biden hillbilly crime family has been doing, and how these Democrats like Raskin and Goldman and Ro Khanna have been lying to protect them.
Yeah, impeachment is a political act, right? And there's no duty to impeach a president, particularly when you know it's going nowhere in the Senate. And so I think the Republicans need to carefully weigh the pros and cons of actually impeaching President Biden, make sure they got the votes. You know, it's not obvious to me. They got a very slim majority in the House. It's not obvious to me that all the Republicans would vote for impeachment. They don't want to pull that trigger and then miss. You know, what the Democrats keep doing is, number one, try to turn the hearing into a farce, and they're reasonably successful at that through their own conduct. And number two, keep moving the goalposts. You know, checks didn't go into Joe Biden's checking account. They went into his relatives' checking accounts. Well, that's how you do it. You know, if you're going to bribe a politician, you don't write checks to him. You write checks to his relatives.
Yeah, but
that's the federal bribery statute.
But it doesn't make any difference. But they did write a check
to
him. They did write a check to him. That's the problem. They're so incompetent at even this with all the shell companies they set up. He did get a check directly from his brother for a loan repayment doesn't show up on the other side of the ledger. Doesn't show up for him.
That's true. You know, that is true. But I think it's important for the Republicans not to allow those goalposts to keep moving and moving and moving. You know, the Democrats like to frame the question, was Joe involved in Hunter's business? Well, the short answer to that is Hunter didn't have a business. What business was Hunter Biden in? None. He didn't have a business.
Right.
His only business was selling access to his father. That was his only business.
Right.
And whether Joe ever did anything for these clients of his, it doesn't make any difference. He sold access to him, and that is a federal crime, and that is an impeachable offense.
Hmm. We were talked about it a little bit earlier, I see Uber and Lyft are leaving your fair city.
Yeah, this is great, Dan. So I travel a lot, as you may know, and when my wife and I travel, of course, we get an Uber to the Twin Cities airport from our house. We can't do that anymore because Uber has suspended service throughout the Twin Cities metro area. It's wonderful. The Minneapolis City Council adopted an ordinance with minimum hourly rates for Uber and Lyft drivers. And when they did that, there were some people in the audience who were cheering and jumping up and down. Yay, you know, I'm going to get a raise. Well, no, actually, you're not going to get a raise.
You're going to get a pink slip.
Your pay now goes to zero. And so, I don't know, they may reconsider that move. We'll see.
Well, what are they going to do? Everyone's going to become a taxi driver now?
I don't know.
Do you have
know.
To buy medallions up there like you have to in the city of Chicago?
Yeah. We have the most expensive taxis in the world here in the Twin Cities, by the way. That's been a very lucrative business until Uber came along. It was great to be a taxi driver. Not so much anymore.
Well, if Ilhan Omar's family members start buying up taxi medallions in the city of Minneapolis, you know which way this is going. Before we let you go, I just wanted to get an update. You know, the last time we had you on, you were recovering from your offices in Minneapolis being firebombed. Which is not an inconsequential development. So where does that all stand?
Well, the investigation has not yet caught the criminals, and I'm starting to lose my optimism that it's going to. But as far as we're concerned, it's all okay. We are moving into new space, which is newer, nicer, bigger, better in every way. Move slated for April 15. So bottom line is we worked remotely for a couple of months. Now we're moving into better quarters. So whoever was hoping to disrupt our business, disrupt our work, failed. That's the good news. Bad news is at least so far they haven't been caught.
John Hendraker, president of the Center of the American Experiment and a founder and contributor to PowerlineBlog.com. John, thanks as always.
Great to be with you, Dan. Have a good day.
Thanks. And he joined us on our Turnkey.pro answer line.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Well, it was a spirited House Republican impeachment inquiry hearing yesterday, thanks to Tony Bobulinski bringing an attitude to name names. And I thought a lot of what we heard from Bobulinski, of course, is what he's been saying for 4 years. But the there was something new. And it was not calling Jamie Raskin and Dan Goldman liars. That was fun, but wasn't new, and anybody paying attention would know what he's saying is true.
Which just showed that he had the courage. Like, he was not going to be messed with.
Correct.
Naval officer, like, he just took it right to him.
Well, he's you know, it's taken 4 years for him to have that moment to speak to the people who have lied about him and attacked his reputation. And so he wanted his day before the Congress, and he got it. He also, but one of the things that was new is this revelation that he and California Representative Ro Khanna had been communicating. And apparently Ro Khanna slithered out before he was confronted publicly by Bobulinski.
I'd like to spend 20 seconds. If you noticed, Congressman Khanna scurried out of here very quickly. And I'm actually disgusted as I sit here that he didn't address me based on the fact that I'm sitting here in front of the world trying to testify to the truth. In October 2020, I have messages I'm willing to produce to both the Democrats and the Republicans that Ro Khanna sent to me saying, you've always demonstrated to me that you're nothing but an honest with the highest integrity individual. And I was begging for him to go on CNN and tell the world in October 2020. I have extensive emails with Congressman Ro Khanna in 2021 and 2022 where I begged him and his staff to sit down with me and look at my BlackBerry phones that the Democrats are so focused on, to hire forensics experts and go through all of the factual information I had. So the fact that he did not even address me and then scurried out of here is disgusting to me.
All right.
Well, and I'll tell you what, too. I mean, contrast Tony Bobulinski on this matter of the Biden Incorporated hillbilly crime family. Hey, I've got all this information. I want you to see it. You make your own judgment. To Adam Schiff and Jamie Raskin and Dan Goldman and others running around for years talking about a smoking gun that would be forthcoming on Trump's collusion with the Russians that was never produced. That's an interesting contrast. For more on this, please be joined by Fred Flights, vice chair of the America First Policy Institute Center, Policy Institute's Center for American Security. He previously served as National Security Council Chief of Staff, CIA analyst, and House Intelligence Committee staff member. Fred, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Good to be here.
Well, against all of the swirl of the allegations against Hunter and Joe and the whole Biden Inc. operation, we have another wrinkle, and this is something that I saw you discussed with our friend John Solomon over at Just the News recently. And this is Hunter Biden trying to facilitate his Chinese communist friends when it comes to essentially becoming the global monopoly on nuclear power.
That's right, and it followed other reports of Hunter Biden trying to sell access to the U.S. natural gas market. Now, some of my fellow conservatives say that this represents some kind of conspiracy by the Biden family with China. You know, I haven't seen evidence of that. Maybe that's the case. I think this is a back read. Jim Jordan said in a recent hearing about the Biden crime family, the reason that Biden kept classified documents at his home was about pride and money. And I think this story about trying to gain access to the most important American producer of nuclear reactors represents the fact that, frankly, Hunter Biden was prepared to sell anything that was not nailed down for money. And I'm afraid his father was in on it.
And this particular play was to facilitate China's CEFC, the Chinese communist-backed CEFC Energy, from to acquiring Westinghouse, right?
That's correct.
And so this is really interesting, too, against the backdrop of another mega deal involving a foreign government, effectively, that was killed by Joe Biden. Nippon Steel tried to acquire U.S. Steel. No, 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 we can't have that. Foreign-owned steel conglomerate? No, no, no. Acquiring a U.S. company? No, no, no. But if we get paid, we're happy to facilitate the Chinese communists in acquiring Westinghouse.
And, you know, it's so frustrating. Look, I'm a national security expert, and I'm spending my time right now looking at the Middle East and the war in Ukraine. And I'm actually turning down TV interviews because I think this is appalling. I think it's pretty clear there is a Biden crime family. They were paid over $10 million for access to Mr. Biden when he was a vice president, thinking that Biden may sometime become president. Obviously, there was nothing this family had to sell that was worth $10 million. But this isn't going anywhere. The media doesn't care. I think the evidence of the hearing yesterday was quite compelling. We've had other really compelling hearings and reports and questions that can't be answered. But the media doesn't care. And it's just so frustrating because if just a small fraction of allegations like this were made against a Republican, they'd be out of there. They'd be indicted. They'd be in jail. But because this is a Biden, they're going to get away with it.
Well, AOC said there's no crime committed, you know. RICO's not a crime. Did you see that part of the hearing?
I thought that was amazing. Now, I'm not an attorney, but I thought RICO is a crime. And I heard some pretty high-powered attorneys on Newsmax TV talk about how, you know, RICO really is a crime. That's what – that's based on – that's the basis of the fraudulent charges against President Trump. I believe in Georgia. I mean, that doesn't mean that Trump is guilty of this, and he's not. But I think we know that RICO is a crime.
Well, and so this is the other thing, too, because the one of the fallback positions of the left is, you know, one, it was first no money went to Joe. Well, that's by the boards. But then it's sort of like, you know, sort of prove that it had some impact, right? If it didn't have any impact, then what does it really matter? It's just Hunter Biden's business. And if he's throwing his dad's name around, that's just what kids do, especially confused kids that are 50 years old and have a crack problem. And so it's there's nothing to see here. But with this CEFC Westinghouse concept, now you see how the former vice president, current vice president, and his family are compromised, and they're compromising America by extension. That's a real thing. That's a substantive, tangible thing.
Yeah, and, you know, once upon a time, politicians resigned because of the appearance of impropriety. We're way past that with Joe Biden, way past it. We know about these shell companies, these LLCs, set up for all the Biden family members to take foreign payments. And all these trips that the vice president brought his son to in China and to Ukraine and with other foreign officials. I mean, the evidence is pretty clear, but the media is just not going to hold Joe Biden accountable.
Do you think that I know you're frustrated, as I am to some extent, but and you don't want to get into the politics of this. So setting the politics of aside and the media's, the D.C. press corps, the corporate media inside the Beltway, their purposeful blindness to this, is it still worthwhile what House Republicans are doing? Should this still be happening?
I'm glad they're doing it. I think that, frankly, we need an historical record. Maybe some Americans will listen. But I'm just frustrated that this isn't going to go anywhere. Biden is not going to be impeached. There won't be a vote to impeach him in the House, and obviously he won't be indicted in the Senate. But look, I'm glad that there's someone discussing it. But in terms of, you know, the efforts that I have to spend in talking about national security, I just don't have the time to do numerous interviews on this because I don't think they're going anywhere.
Fred Flights, we appreciate you doing an interview with us. He's the vice chair of the America First Policy Institute, Center for American Security. Previously served as NSC chief of staff, a CIA analyst, and a House Intel Committee staff member. Fred, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Only the biggest stories. Only the biggest guests. And only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. A couple of housekeeping notes before we get on to this issue of illegal immigrants owning and carrying guns in America and a judicial decision emanating from a federal judge in Illinois on the topic. Number one, Trump is not going down, is not going to just turn over Trump Tower without a fight, or at least seizing the fundraising opportunity. He posted on social media, Trump Social, get your filthy hands off Trump Tower. Help me raise $454 million for the bond I need to appeal the decision in New York. So, I mean, so he's making a appeal. This is like a crowdfunding.
GoFundMe.
Yeah, like a GoFundMe.
Help
like,
save
yeah,
me.
Crowdfunding. So, I mean, 71 million voters. 71 million voters. So that's, what is that, like $6.50 per voter, per Trump voter in 2020? I mean, yeah, maybe. I don't know.
You want to pony up $6?
I'll pony up, yeah, $6.50. I'll do my part.
Why don't you throw in 10, big shooter?
Well, it'd be interesting. I mean, it's just an interesting play. I really wonder what kind of response it will get. I suspect it'll probably get a pretty positive one. So we'll watch that. The other is, today is a designated day of some importance to us who are concerned about people with special needs in this world. And Kevin in Austin, Texas, has reminded us of that. Kevin, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Dan, I'm old. I wasn't sure if you guys were going to take my call. I really am. So today is Global Down Syndrome Awareness Day. And I have a daughter with Down syndrome. She's 16 years old. And she's a lot more capable that people are aware of. And I think people do know that. And what really offends me when, as far as, you know, just not just for Down syndrome, but the whole pro-life thing, the pro-abortion people go out and they try to say, we're just, you know, oh, we're just pro-birth. And that is such a lie. And it really offends me. And, you know, to tie it into politics, I'm sorry to say this, but, you know, the whole, they care more about illegal aliens than they do about our own children that may have special needs. And these resources are going to those people. But I really, I am moved. I wasn't sure if you're going to take my call. They're wonderful people. You know, my daughter is the light of my life besides my other daughter as well. And it's just, I just want people aware of it. So thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah, of course. Really, thanks for the call, Kevin. Obviously there's a lot of good nonprofits in this space. Gigi's Playhouse, Nancy Giannis, who we've had on the show up there, Hoffman Estates Way, but with, Gigi's Playhouses all over the country, all over the globe now. It's become an international organization. The nonprofit I'm affiliated with in Chicago, Envision Unlimited, is also worthwhile. So if, you know, after you give your $6.50 to Trump, you know, continue to Venmo or debit card a few other charities on this World Down Syndrome Awareness Day. Okay. So this decision out of the federal courts and an Obama appointee. An Obama appointee.
Right. People need to know that.
She is Judge Sharon Johnson Coleman. And she dismissed charges against a person in this country illegally. He was arrested in 2020 for violating a federal law that prohibits undocumented immigrants from possessing guns. And he wasn't just possessing it. He was using it. He was firing off rounds, but it was during the summer of 2020, and he was shooting at vehicles he believed were looters approaching his neighborhood after police warned of potential threats. No prior criminal record. Okay. Interesting. In her ruling, he received and used the handgun solely for self-protection and protection of property during a time of documented civil unrest in the spring of 2020. That was her conclusion based on the facts in that case. it's interesting because this has some gun rights advocates at odds with one another. Yep. The court finds that that this guy's criminal record containing no improper use of weapon, as well as the nonviolent circumstances of arrest, do not support a finding that he poses a risk to public safety such that he cannot be trusted to use a weapon responsibly and should be deprived of his Second Amendment right. His Second Amendment right. He's in this country legally. His Second Amendment right to bear arms in self-defense. Thus, the court finds that the law under which he was being prosecuted is unconstitutional. So that means that a person here illegally has a constitutional right to own a gun and to use a gun, just like a law-abiding American does. What do you think about that? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
I don't know. What are your thoughts? Because people were pinging my phone yesterday for it and some against it. And then I just think they should become American citizens first, you know. And I'm not going to apologize for that. Because next thing you know, now they're going to be able to vote if they're here illegally. And it's going to lead to other things.
Well, let's hear, I mean, just to, so you hear the viewpoint of two different gun rights advocates.
Okay.
The general counsel for the National Shooting Sports Foundation, a gentleman named Larry Keene, he said, the Supreme Court has said the people, in quotes, are members of the political community. Illegal aliens in the United States are not part of the political community and thus do not have Second Amendment rights. By contrast, a gun rights lawyer in Florida said, I've been sitting here contemplating why you want to alienate people from the Second Amendment through this tortured backward reading. He went on to say the idea that they're not a member of the political community and that there have been, previous prohibitions against certain people owning guns. Well, of course, we know that. I mean, convicted felons would have to reapply for their gun rights. The lawyer from Florida, gun rights lawyer from Florida, said that argument ignores literally everything in the context of what citizenship is and was, and ignores the gravity of otherwise disenfranchising conduct. He argued that founding era bans on various groups owning guns, like loyalists to the crown, were based on either concerns they were dangerous or a rejection of their humanity, often for racist reasons. He said it made more sense that historical gun restrictions were based on dangerousness than whether they were part of the political community. He asks, quote, which requires fewer logical leaps, personhood and dangerousness or your political community idea? And this is also against the backdrop of Bruin, where basically the idea is that the right to own a gun and use a gun for self-protection is a individual constitutional right. It's essentially a human right because, as we know, those rights enshrined in our Constitution, in the Bill of Rights, are God-given rights. God-given rights, the argument goes. So before I tell you what I think. It's just after listening to both sides from the pro right to protect yourself, the pro Second Amendment side. It is interesting. It does present a little bit more of a complicated picture than one might think at first blush. Thinking about the implication of saying that the right to protect oneself is not a human right. Potentially, that being the read on it. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Jim in the loop, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yes, Dan, Amy, good to hear you this morning. I was going to say there's two things. First of all, it's great to finally have an Obama-appointed judge rule in favor of the Constitution and the Second Amendment. The fact that it says the people have the right to bear arms. So if you're here on a green card or you're here, however you're here, you have that right. So it's good that they finally follow the Constitution. And then the second thing I was going to say is, by doing that, by acknowledging that even non-citizens have a right to bear arms and protect themselves in this country, you should alleviate all the requirements on legal citizens for FOID cards and all these other IDs and restrictions, because they shouldn't have to comply with that stuff. They should just simply follow the Constitution that you have a right to bear arms.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Jim. I mean, this is, yeah, that's the argument that you're hearing from the pro side. Now, it's funny because, of course, the only time that the left wants to confer Second Amendment rights to somebody is if they're in this country illegally. Because otherwise, I mean, don't get me wrong here. This Obama appointee, Sharon Johnson Coleman, is not a proponent of Second Amendment rights. She's just basically saying, look, if you're going to have a Second Amendment, then it has to apply to people here illegally as well. Because, of course, we are of the attitude that there should be no distinction between people here illegally and legal American citizens, lawful American citizens, when it comes to rights and benefits. So that's interesting. Grant in Rockford.
Good morning, you guys. You know, you just can't believe this. They have no right, they have no business to be here. I understand rights come from God, but that's only enshrined under our Constitution. You can have all the rights you want over in England or Canada, but you sure as hell can't buy a handgun. So you have no business to be here, and the entire thing is just pissing on the American citizen. If that was me, if I was pulled over or my wife was pulled over with a gun or something, you bet your ass they'd throw the book at us just because we're taxpaying white citizens. Have a good day.
Thanks for the call, Grant. Jack in Geneva. Hey, Jack.
Hey, the problem I have with this is it's just a backhanded slap at the Constitution. I mean, if you're going to give them the rights to have a gun, then, like Amy said, then you can vote, then you can do this. You don't have to be here legally. There is no there's no citizenship.
Thanks for the call. Pete in Montgomery.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Amy. It's been a while since we've spoken. I think the handgun issue itself, he shouldn't have had it in the first place because he broke the law to come into the country if he came in illegally, and that's a prerequisite. No felons can have firearms. But more importantly,
and so it was a misdemeanor immigration charge, misdemeanor violation. That was handled by the court, and they said the misdemeanor doesn't rise to the level of depriving him of his Second Amendment rights.
Well, then all of the constitutional rights are then conferred on any person who enters the country illegally. Or legally, all constitutional rights. That's the door she opened, and she opened it intentionally not to cover the gun issue.
Yeah, probably. Thanks for the call, Pete, which is why this is complicated in both directions, isn't it? I mean, Judge Tom Hardiman, who is a George W. Bush appointee and a Trump Supreme Court finalist, shortlister, he writing for the majority in the case, in the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, talking about the Constitution, it mentions the people, quote unquote, twice with respect to voting for Congress, and the people are recognized as having rights to assemble peacefully, to petition the government for redress, and to be protected against unreasonable searches and seizures. Unless the meaning of the phrase "the people" varies from provision to provision, and the Supreme Court in Heller suggested it does not, to conclude that in this case, it's not among the people for Second Amendment purposes would exclude him from those other rights as well. And we see no reason to adopt an inconsistent reading of the people. So this is setting up for a Supreme Court showdown. There's no question about it. But it's really an interesting argument because of these sort of ideological cross currents. Greg, Northwest Side.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. For years, it has been a foregone conclusion in the courts that anybody in our country, illegal or somebody on vacation or any other case, is protected by the 4th, 5th, 6th, 8th, 9th, 10th Amendment.
Right.
And that has always been defined and been a settled matter in court. So if that percentage of the Bill of Rights applies, it is not beyond the scope of thinking that other rights guaranteed under the Bill of Rights would be to any human being here at any time. Now, what's truly interesting about this is it appears that this federal judge just declared Illinois a constitutional carry state. And that's what we should run with.
Well, it already is because of the Bruin decision. Thanks for the call, Greg. I mean, it already is, despite their efforts to, hamstring gun rights in Illinois as much as possible. Lee and Hammond.
Yeah, hi. You know, the whole point of somebody being an illegal alien or somebody that's not a citizen here is they don't have rights. They are basically here at the well-meaning of the American citizens. They if anything is extended to them, that's at because of our good graces toward them. It's got nothing to do with them having rights. Otherwise, what is the point of being a citizen? I mean, what is the whole point of getting American citizenship?
Well, thanks for the call, Lee. I think there's a difference between rights and benefits. And the benefits piece of it is indefensible. The taxpayer funding of their lives, that's indefensible. There's no constitutional right to that. But the restraints on government that exist among all of us simultaneously without imposing a burden on one to provide for the other, that's a different thing. And so I think you have to say, yes, right, we understand what the left is doing, but let's not have them walk us into a trap that undermines our fundamental understanding of our God-given rights as enshrined in the Bill of Rights, like the right to express ourselves, the right to petition our government, and the right to protect ourselves. And you can still be a proponent of border security. It doesn't mean that you have a right to be here illegally. So that's the issue. You know, you have no right to be an American. That's that. So to pull back from the rights, the God-given rights enshrined in the Bill of Rights, pull back and say, well, but you don't have a right to be an American in the first place. So you're out if you're here illegally. I think that's the perhaps better way to think about it. Ed in Portage, Indiana.
Yeah, my question for the gun rights issue is if he's here illegally, how did he obtain the firearm legally?
Well, right.
If you're supposed to pass the background check, you know, wouldn't that be the felony in and of itself?
Potentially, you could potentially make that argument, right? Thanks for the call, Ed. But you'd have to bring felony illegal possession of a gun, and or as you say, and as others said, then you have if you don't need a background check and you don't need to have, like in Illinois, a FOID card, well, then that needs to be rolled back for everybody, doesn't it? And I'm not suggesting background checks be rolled back for everybody, by the way. FOID card, yes. Background checks, no. Fascinating case. We'll have to take up more of it on another at another time, but good discussion. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.